This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. If you're new to the podcast or relatively new, we do, I think between all of us, we do at least three episodes per week, even during the off season. So we have the recruiting pod. We also have the basketball pod, Sam Webb, Tim McCormick. The recruiting pod is Sam, Steve, Bryce, and occasionally the Joshes as well. Lots of guests as well throughout the summer. So you should get your fix on everything Michigan, no matter whether you're a recruiting person, more of a team, current team oriented fan, or both. Be sure to subscribe, follow the podcast, throw us a rating as well. Tell your friends about it. They might like it too. Anyways, you can read all of our stories over at themichiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. And this episode, it's going to be all football. We did a mailbag last week. I answered a bunch of questions. This week, just a couple quick topics. There's a couple kind of broader, I guess, what I would call typical off-season topics. And then we can discuss Dalen Baldwin's commitment and kind of what that means for the current team. I guess the first news item, it's very quick. There isn't much for Steve and I to discuss. Michigan presented its fiscal year 2022 projected budget. And obviously the headline, or the initial headline, was that they're projecting a $63 million deficit for this past year. But in the projected 2022 budget, Michigan did not do this last year. Last year, they projected 50% spectator revenue, combining ticket sales and seat licenses. This year, they're projecting 100%. So people keep asking, when is Michigan going to announce that they're 100%? They're probably not going to announce it until much later, just in case things change. And they've cited the MDHHS, Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. It's going to be kind of their call if they keep capacity allowances at 100. But I think Michigan projecting 100% capacity is a pretty good sign if you are a ticket holder or someone who's inclined to go to the games, that it's probably going to be a full big house. So I guess that's that. That's very different from 2020. And speaking of, proud of that segue, the main topic that we're discussing today, just because I've seen it come up on Twitter, I've seen it come up on our message board, is kind of assessing how much stock gets put into Michigan's 2020 season. I mean, the debate, I guess, on the surface is it was a weird year. They went 2-4. They did not play non-conference opponents. They did not play kind of some of the games that I think Michigan and its fans have grown accustomed to being kind of the tune-up games, the warm-up games for the schedule ahead. I mean, week one, they're playing a ranked team on the road. Week two, they're playing a rival. Week three, they're playing a ranked team on the road. You know, and I think of the six games they played, I want to say four of them were against ranked teams. So, you know, kind of a different type of schedule. Obviously, things were also different without fans. The fall camp was strange. I mean, at one point they were training for a September start, and then they basically had to pause while trying to stay in shape. There was no spring ball. Summer ball was weird and different as well. And then, of course, Michigan specifically had a lot of injuries. I mean, you can rattle them off: Jalen Mayfield, Cam McGrone, Quiddy Pay, Ryan Hayes, Aiden Hutchinson. If I'm forgetting
both one quarterbacks.
Both quarterbacks. Yep. And then, of course, there were opt-outs as well with Ambry Thomas and Nico Collins. I think I pulled up the stat that of their top five draft picks. I think they played a combined like six games, or I think it was like a combined 8 or 10 games last season for Michigan out of a possible 30. So yeah, that's the debate we're going to have. Obviously it's by nature, a debate. I don't think there's any correct answer until they play, but Steve, I will let you go first. When you kind of look ahead toward 2021, Michigan was really bad last season. And I think that's naturally causing most of like these preview magazines or preseason preview articles to really, I mean, Michigan's not in anyone's top 25. I don't think anyone's expecting them to, contend for the Big Ten title. And then there are a lot of places and perhaps this will be a debate we have in the back half of this episode, that are putting teams like Indiana ahead of Michigan. And some, I think, might even toy with the idea of putting Michigan State ahead of Michigan. So I guess when you see this and obviously we discussed the 2020 season at length in the moment and after, how much stock do you put into that 2020 season? I mean, is it fair to write it off as a weird year? Or is it fair to say, boy, they really, I mean, the wheels fell off and everything fell apart. I guess, how do you assess it now that we are, I don't know, 6-7 months removed from the end of Michigan's season?
Answer is always in the middle a little bit, right? I think the biggest, yeah. On one hand, it felt like after the Michigan State game that Michigan just gave up almost. We saw lax effort on both sides of the ball in multiple games following that loss, particularly defensively. I even though they won, I always look at Rutgers and feel like there was some really, really just not caring going on out there at certain.
That was one of their wins.
Yeah, that's what I said. Is that the one game that they ended up winning? That was something that stood out to me. At the same time, though, I do think the naysayers, the detractors, I don't think take into account just how banged up Michigan was between the injuries and the opt-outs. You're talking about probably, six of their best eight players. Yeah. Right. And at important positions, we're already reading reports of Nico Collins actually having a really good training camp for Houston. Feels like a guy that would have been a huge asset again. The quarterback situation, I know Milton struggled, was replaced, but neither guy was like, McNamara played hurt for a while, it felt like. So, I mean, we had talked openly before the cancellations that there was a good chance that Dan Villari would have been the starter for Michigan if they had played Ohio State.
Yep.
Right.
I think that's infinite. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how much stock you put into Michigan in that game, starting their third string quarterback, a guy who'd never played a college snap in his career. Right. So it's in the middle. I think Michigan's a definite rebound candidate this year. It's just the question is what does a rebound mean? Is 7-6 a rebound over 2-4? That's not going to appease, many people. I do think they're being slept on a little bit nationally, which is a nice change of pace, I think, for maybe the mentality in the locker room, which I think is the biggest thing that will answer whether or not it really was an aberration. Because the bigger problem, as many physical issues as they had, we just talked about, the mental issues seem to be as evident, if not worse, just across the portions of the roster that were still healthy enough to play. So Michigan changes things up. We've talked a lot about the new staff, et cetera, et cetera. How they kind of rebound mentally, I think, will go a long ways. I think the Washington game in week 2, if they were to lose that game, how they kind of rebound from something like that. Because again, we're not picking Michigan to go undefeated nobody's going to, right? So we expect them to lose a game at some point. How they maybe respond after whenever that first loss may happen, I think we'll know a lot about whether or not 2020 was a sign of things to come or just a blip on the radar.
Yeah, if I'm picking between, because I'm with you, I think it is in the middle, and we also won't know until the games are played. But if I'm actually picking a side to this debate, I think you can write it off as a little bit of a fluke. And I've been pretty harsh on the team and what it was and the changes that needed to be made. I think Michigan addressed a healthy chunk of those changes. We'll see if they address them correctly in September, October. But I just, because the thing that also doesn't get discussed, because the injuries are a part of that and the opt-outs are a part of that. And Michigan also had 10 players drafted the year prior. And I believe it was the Wisconsin game where Michigan didn't play very well. They got, you know, destroyed. And they just looked like they almost looked like a mid-major team playing Wisconsin. But I think I added it up, and I think Michigan was missing, between injuries, opt-outs, players departed from the year before, 17 starters from the 2019 team that was kind of the primary starting 22. And as you mentioned, at a lot of key positions. And it was kind of like, okay, if Michigan had gone into this season, and let's say they had lost last season, they finished the 2019 season, they lose all the players they lost. They also lose Nico Collins, Ambry Thomas, Quiddy Pay, Aiden Hutchinson, Jalen Mayfield, Ryan Hayes, they all leave. People would not be going into the 2020 season like, oh, Michigan will be good. I mean, people would be saying, no, that's not going to be a very good team. And so the Michigan State loss, they were healthy for, right? And so that is the point that you bring up is how, what were the mental issues that caused Michigan to, I'm not in the locker room. I don't know if it was overconfidence or lack of preparation or, mentally kind of checking out because there aren't fans. It is a weird year. I haven't heard a single athlete, talk about how much they loved being on campus this year. I mean, in a lot of ways, it was just such a completely different experience. But that's where you wonder, okay, some teams actually did pretty well with this. Kind of embracing the mental anguish of the weird season. So the Michigan State part gives me pause, but the rest of the season, I mean, they were legitimately dinged up. They were a legitimately young team. And they were a program that probably was incorrectly labeled as a contender heading into the season, that frankly had more rebuilding to do than we realized. And when the injuries happen and the opt-outs happen, then that looks even worse. So I'm of the belief that Michigan was kind of if they had played a 12 game season, they were kind of it was a down year to be sure, but more of the 7-8 win variety, the 7-6, 8-5, a season no one's happy with, but they're maybe not, it's not quite the stench around it like a 2-4 season has. So if I were to pick a side, I do think it's in the middle. I think the defense clearly had some serious schematic issues to address. I think, Steve, you and I have been saying that since the 2019 season, actually, where it was kind of like they didn't make the changes that I think we thought they should have made. Now they have, arguably, a year late. So there were some serious defensive issues. Hard to look at that Michigan State game and say that the defense was prepared from a not even just like schematic standpoint, but like a fundamental standpoint. So there are some serious issues. I don't think Michigan would have had a great season last year under any context. But if I'm looking at it, kind of zooming out a little bit now that we're a few months removed, I think that it was probably closer to a 7-8 win team in a full season. And I think that the injuries and departures were legitimate. I mean, you know, everyone talks about how much Michigan's NFL draft, everyone in the Michigan fan base talks about Michigan's NFL draft success. And it's very impressive. It's at the top five level. You know, you can measure that in a few different ways, but that also does put a lot of pressure on Michigan to adequately recruit, develop, and reload talent year in and year out. I mean, that 2019 team, I don't think anyone was saying that team is the third or fourth most talented team in the country from an NFL standpoint, but they've had 18 draft picks in the last 2 years. And so that's maybe the part where I can see where Michigan fans are frustrated, because it's like finally a player starts looking good and then they're gone. So I'm willing to count it as a write-off. I mean, when I look into the 2021 season, I almost look at it the same way I look at 2019, which 2019 was not a season Michigan was especially proud of, but it was 9-4. They were a top 25 team, I believe, the entire season. So yeah, it's just it's an interesting debate kind of looking at what's next for Michigan. So Steve, I guess the other question with this is, with them going 2-4, which parts of the team are you looking at specifically as, okay, they didn't have an excuse last year. How are they going to develop? How are they going to be ready to be, let's say, a top 15 team? Because maybe that's the realistic goal for Michigan this season. But whether they get there or not is to be debated. But I think if Michigan finished as a top 15 team this season, I think most people would call that a successful season. So if 2020 was a write-off, I mean, how do they make sure that they are on track for that goal heading into this season?
Couple things. I mean, and I know we'll get into the receiver stuff in a little bit, but I just think Michigan's offensive line feels talented enough to allow this offense to succeed at a higher level than it has in the last two seasons, particularly in like bigger games. I think Michigan fans probably should feel more comfortable with McNamara at quarterback, or whoever wins. Again, I think last episode we said, I don't think JJ McCarthy will go down without a fight this fall, but and there's Alan Bowman too, but either way, I think Michigan should feel more comfortable at quarterback maybe than they did last year and the year before, as far as the surrounding cast offensively feels stronger from top to bottom, particularly up front, where I think that they can. I think they can find more success running the football to open things up in the passing game. So I think a lot of the talk is going to be about the defense, right? How do the cornerbacks respond? Does Daxton Hill play like a five-star? Where's the linebacker depth? Interior, right? I mean, there's a lot. I think there are more questions. And that's why I think the onus is on the offense to be what we think they can be this season. And like I said, I think that starts up front. You know, you're talking about guys like Ryan Hayes coming back. Andrew Stuber has a ton of experience. And then you have really talented young players like Zinter, Trevor Keegan, Barnhart, all kind, you know, other guys that are ready, it feels like, to take that step forward. So the questions will be on defense, but I think what can help Michigan, what can be the propellant to maybe having a season that fans will be happy about, I think starts up front on the offensive line. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I like that point, because I think Michigan needs to be a really good offense this season to be a good team. Like, I don't think this can be a year where they have a top 40-ish offense, but have a strong, I mean, maybe they surprise. I don't know if I see a great defense based on the personnel that they have. But I do think there's really a lot of potential on the offense. You mentioned the offensive line. I mean, they've got the size, they've got the experience. I would argue they've got the recruiting talent to put together a top 15 offensive line. Still have to do it, but I think there's a path. Running back, I don't think you have to look too, you don't have to squint too much to see some talent in the running back room. The receivers, we'll talk about them in a moment. And then the quarterbacks, Steve, I have a story that will come out, I think, next week, looking at some of the biggest strengths for Michigan at each position group. These quarterbacks that Michigan has, McNamara, McCarthy, and Bowman, they have thrown a lot. I think Charles Power had this stat that like a lot of the top NFL drafted quarterbacks had really prolific high school careers from a throwing standpoint. And obviously you can be a first round pick no matter how much you throw in college, but I think that the genesis is that like it tends to be better to have thrown a lot in your career than necessarily be the 6'5" or 6'4" kind of the create a player camp superstar with all the talent in the world. I mean, it's kind of like thinking of like a baseball pitcher. Okay, there are pitchers who can pitch really well. I mean, they have just the physical tools, but then there are pitchers who's just thrown a lot and they know how to adapt and adjust in games and know how to, adjust to different batters and know how to handle certain situations. That Michigan's quarterback room, all three of those quarterbacks I mentioned, threw for more yards and touchdowns in high school than Shea Patterson, Dylan McCaffrey, Wilton Spate, Brandon Peters, Jake Rudock, Joe Milton, and Shane Morris. They threw for more yards and more touchdowns than all of them. And so I'm really curious about the room, because you mentioned, I think there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of show me emphasis with this quarterback room, but they have thrown a lot. They're inexperienced, speaking to McNamara and McCarthy in terms of college, but they're not inexperienced as quarterbacks. And Bowman is very experienced as a quarterback. So I'm very fascinated by the room. And I'm with you. I think you can look at the cornerback room and say, well, that, if Michigan's going to be good, they need to play better. I think that's fair to say. I think the safety room, I'd argue there's too much talent for that to not be a really strong strength of the team. And then I think, defense, the front seven, as we discussed last episode, a lot of room for improvement there. There is, and there's talent to improve, but they also have a long ways to go. But I think Michigan needs a top 20, top 25 offense this season to be a top 15 team. I think they need some maulers up front. I think they need all the talent that we've talked maybe ad nauseum about, the speed and the shiftiness and some of the playmakers they have. They need that to show. And then the quarterback, whoever is the starter, has to jump in right away. They don't have time to get used to the water because they play Washington in week two. I'd argue Western Michigan is an above average group of five team. I don't know if that's upset alert or anything, but Michigan's not, they're not going to have a 70-3, week one, two, and three. I mean, they are going to have to be good right away. And speaking of,
real quick,
few
guys, I think of like that could also just individuals that could dictate a rebound on either side of the ball are guys who actually have to rebound themselves. So Brad Hawkins,
yeah,
had a very rough 2020. I think Josh Ross, another one. Chris Hinton too. I think it's time there. Mm-hmm. For if we're gonna see something there. So obviously rebound will be pushed by the units as a whole, but within those units, obviously there are guys personally who maybe didn't have a great 2020 who are capable. Vincent Gray also, which I know has become a favorite, kind of one of the first guys people point to because of his struggles. But like,
right.
Really one of the, like him and Hawkins, both guys that like their struggles last season were borderline mysterious. You know, Gray actually played really well against Alabama in the bowl, in the Citrus Bowl in 19. And you're talking about, again, you know, Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, like literally NFL receivers, played a really good game and was just, something was not right in 2020. So those guys to get mentally back on track, you know, I think as individuals, there's a few guys, I think in particular, that could really, you know, dictate whether Michigan accomplishes what most would consider an acceptable 2021.
Yeah, that's very true. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about some of the opponents Michigan will face and who is the toughest opponent on Michigan's schedule, thinking about the context of the schedule as well, other than Ohio State. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So this one came about. It was another discussion that occurred on the message board. Apparently, the way I described Michigan's loss to Indiana last season, I don't know. I don't know if it rubbed people the wrong way is the right word, but it caused a stir over me kind of asserting that Indiana was significantly better than Michigan and probably should be viewed as better than Michigan heading into this season, a statement that I don't actually know if I agree with. We'll talk about it in a moment, but it kind of got me thinking, okay, you know, Ohio State, they're on a different level right now. They just played in the national title game. They have some questions themselves, but they look pretty capable of getting back to that national title game this season. But the rest of Michigan's schedule still is very intriguing. You know, I think there's a few quote unquote gimme games. You never know, but you kind of, if we're predicting Western Michigan, Northern Illinois, Maryland, even with Talia as their quarterback, I don't know if I see them truly contending with Michigan. Rutgers, even last season aside, you know, there's the write-off part, but I don't know if that game's close in the Big House this fall. So there's a couple games that are maybe on the easier end. I think you could argue Nebraska might be, even if it's on the road, might be on the easier end. But there's some other games for a variety of reasons that I've kind of circled as potential candidates to be the second toughest game on the schedule. There's a game at Wisconsin. There's a game at Penn State, a home game against Indiana, home game against Washington, road game at Michigan State, home game against Northwestern. I don't know if we need to rank all six of those, but those are kind of the ones I've penciled in as, depending on how good Michigan is next season, how good those teams are, those could be toss-ups. Michigan could be an underdog, or Michigan could be favored. Steve, I'll let you go first. I think I know which one you're going to pick, but of those games, which one should worry Michigan the most?
It's tough. I think Michigan's schedule sucks this year. This is a, it's a lot rough. I'm not obviously not going to pick this game, but you know that game at Nebraska is going to be at night, and there is a ton of pressure on Scott Frost to produce at this season. And I think that game is going to be a rough game, whether Nebraska even turns out to be that great or not. That's one of those, they're going to be circling that one in the calendar all year because it'll be their big night game. It'll probably be prime time-ish or something. That one is quietly a very not, I don't even think trap game. I think it's going to be just a tough game. Which Northwestern team, you know, if it's like Northwestern is very up and down. If it's last year's yeah. Northwestern team, then that's another rough one. I do think the answer still is between at Wisconsin, at Penn State.
Fair. Yeah.
I think I said before the show, I was thinking Penn State. I'm actually going to lean Wisconsin. Michigan has struggled mightily against Wisconsin.
What's the combined score of the last few years?
Right. I mean, they beat them pretty good. Like it's been back and forth, right? You had the Jordan Lewis game. Then I believe you had didn't they blow them out? Also, was that the same game? Did LeVert Hill have the pick six in the same game as Jordan Lewis made the interception?
No. So right. 2016, 14-7, Michigan wins. That's a Jordan Lewis game. 2017 is the Brandon Peters concussion game. That game was pretty close. 2018, Michigan rolls to a victory. But then the last two seasons
have not even.
They were down, I think, a combined 9 touchdowns at halftime in those two games.
And so for that reason, I think I'm gonna go with Wisconsin. Michigan has played Penn State pretty well overall, right? I mean, even the game they lost in Happy Valley a couple of years ago, they were a dropped touchdown pass away from coming back from 3 touchdowns down to tie it on the road. So Wisconsin just always seems to – their blueprint has been – Michigan's Achilles. I mean, they have just beat the crap out of Michigan up front the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a very big question mark this season again. They're going to be challenged like crazy. And we've seen, I know they struggled down the stretch last year, but I just think Graham Mertz is the most talented quarterback Wisconsin's had in a while, probably since Russell Wilson, right? Just I'm strictly on talent alone. You know, now he's a returning starter with a ton of experience under his belt. I just think that game is going to be very tough. You can always just go and look and say, well, Wisconsin lost this guy and that guy. They just seem to come out of the ground there as far as like who they, you know, it's like whoever they have. So I'm actually going to go, I'll give you the 3. I'll go Wisconsin, then Penn State. I'm going to say Nebraska. I just think, I just think that game is going to be, we've seen Michigan wither in those spots before. Big game on the road. The Lincoln Memorial is going to be full. They still have, despite their struggles, Nebraska still has one of the most rabid, hardcore fan bases in college football. I just think that game is going to be really, really tough for Michigan.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll wait before I dog that pick. I'm just not super sold on Nebraska taking a step forward this season.
I'm not necessarily either, though. That's the thing. Like it's not so much. Have they what?
Well, have they come close to like a big win? I mean, you got to think they're hungry for. Sorry, that was not meant to be like as blunt as it was. But
no, you're right. No, I was laughing because you're right. I mean, it's they have it. That like almost makes me feel more comfortable in saying it though, because it just the you know, I don't know. I just think the pressure is so huge on them this year. Frost has not delivered, and I know they've had some, you know, Wandale Robinson left. I don't know if their quarterback situation is still in flux or not.
Of them transferred.
Right. So I just, it'll be a metal testing game, not to mention it is the week after they play Wisconsin. So You know, we say, I talk about how they might rebound after their first loss. I think there's a decent chance Michigan's 4-0 going into Madison, right?
Yeah.
They come out of that game, say Wisconsin beats them, then all of a sudden, then we're talking about my main thesis point was how Michigan will respond after their first loss. Now you're going into Lincoln. Like I said, probably a night game, rabid crowd, all the pressure in the world on Nebraska to win. So I just think the schedule sets up for some, it's interesting, you know, it's a bit of a gauntlet. It's not like you're taking on a top 15 team, but there's six games in a row where Michigan is going to have to play a very high quality football game if they want to win due to various reasons. They're going to be more talented than at least half of these teams, probably four of the six, if not five, but there are factors and situations in play that can put all of those games in doubt.
There are. And I don't think you're wrong to pick one of the road games as the third toughest, because Michigan has struggled away from the Michigan Stadium atmosphere. Once again, 2020 aside, I mean, even when they were, you know, doing well under Jim Harbaugh, they haven't exactly delivered on the road, I would say, at a level you would expect for how good the teams were. But I almost think that, you know, we've talked about this on this podcast before, I almost think they struggle more on the road when they're like lulled to sleep a little bit. Like it's a, like at Northwestern in 2018, or, you know, some of these late arriving crowds. Wisconsin, I know, has had some late arriving crowds. Seems like Indiana has kind of caught Michigan by surprise on the road a couple times. They didn't win until last season, but I think a high packed atmosphere actually could help Michigan, but you're right. It will be tough, and you're absolutely right that Nebraska, I don't know exactly how their schedule shakes out, but they might spend a couple weeks, extra weeks this summer game planning for that game, kind of feeling like a win over Michigan could, kind of catalyze the team a little bit. So yeah, has trap game potential. I agree with you on Wisconsin. They're the number one. I think hard to not say Penn State is the number two, even though I think they're in a similar spot as Michigan in terms of they keep producing NFL talent. They're recruiting solidly, but it just seems like every year there's a couple position groups where they're vulnerable. And I think Michigan and Penn State are kind of, I view them, maybe this is wrong of me, but I view them relatively similarly heading into this season.
The only difference was Penn State played a little bit better near the end, right?
Yeah.
Both had very disappointing seasons overall, I would suspect.
And probably Penn State, I think, would have could argue that they had the same quote unquote write-off excuse. I mean, they had Freiermuth out, Parsons out. I don't remember all the names of everyone else who was out, but it was funny because I think people were like, I think it was like CBS had 11 players combined between Penn State and Michigan in their top like 200 draft prospects, and I think like one of them was playing in that game, and it was Quiddy Pay. Right. It was something ridiculous. So anyway, Penn State, I still think that's really tough.
So Nebraska, real quick, there's a shot they're 5-1 going into that Michigan game.
There you go.
They got Oklahoma. They have to go to Oklahoma on September 18th. That looks like you would assume that's a probable loss. But otherwise, at Michigan State, we'll see. And they get Northwestern.
I take Michigan State.
They got a lot of questions to answer too, though, still. And they get Northwestern at home. I wouldn't pick them to be 5-1, but there is a possibility they'd be 5-1 in that spot. So think of that. They have Minnesota and Purdue after that. Their schedule is very back half. They have Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa to end the season. It's not going to be easy. Great. They get two of them at home, but either way. So yeah, I mean, you could foresee, you know, if let's say they upset, I don't know what the line would be for Nebraska, Michigan State right now, but Northwestern, let's say they're favored, they upset Northwestern, you're 5-1, based on the Northwestern's the only real legit opponent they have at home before Michigan. So we're going to assume that's a night game. That just becomes, again, Michigan probably more talented. Michigan on a level playing field would probably beat Nebraska more times than Nebraska would beat Michigan. But you get all those other factors in there. You build the pressure up. Just makes it an interesting little game.
Yeah. Keep your receipts if you want. I think North Nebraska, Illinois is going to be pretty tough for the Cornhuskers. That's where I'm at.
All right.
On viewing Nebraska.
Bielema's first. Is that literally the first game, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think it's the first game of the college football season.
Sure.
You know, we don't need to talk about the Illinois-Nebraska game any more than that. I think it'll be closer than one. I don't think Nebraska is going to be 5-1. And two, I think that there's a potential for a couple losses on Nebraska's schedule. So anyway, I'm with you, Wisconsin, Penn State, probably 1-2. And so for me, it's a debate between Washington, Indiana. You're right, Northwestern. I mean, if they have won the Big Ten West two of the last 3 years, so hardly a team to discount. And then I think Michigan State as well. Of those four, I think I'm going to go with Indiana. I actually kind of like Michigan's chances just because they're so familiar with Indiana. They do the scouting report every year. You know, I think they, they know what Michael Penix is about. They know his game. You know, Indiana did lose a lot of coaches. I mean, Kane Womack's gone. He's their really good defensive coordinator who found some key to success against Wisconsin. I think they held Wisconsin to 6 points. Maybe Michigan ought to watch that game to figure out what to do against the Badgers. But yeah, it's but they do have talent that has caught the eyes of NFL. I mean, them in Washington, I think I view kind of similarly. They're both at home, which could help Michigan, but you know, talented enough, have enough, you know, kind of game changing type of players that they'll be very, very interesting. Now I'm just hung up on Nebraska. I'm like, am I missing something here? Like, it's just, I have started those position group rankings of Michigan's opponents, and Nebraska really just did not jump out to me at any spot in particular. So
it's not plus, again, it's not about their roster. I just think it's all the other factors that play in that game. And like I said, it's also big because it's on the road.
Yes, that is true.
If it was at home, it wouldn't even be in that. We wouldn't even mention them. Like, I wouldn't even consider it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Really curious about Michigan State. I don't know what they're going to be with all the roster changes. And then, of course, there's always the mental, you know, in that game, you almost want to have lost the previous year when previewing the next season, because I think, like, you know, it's all about the hunger and the motivation and everything. So that's a narrative heavy matchup, but yeah, so those are our thoughts there. Yeah. I'm with you. I think just Wisconsin, the way they've beaten Michigan, because they haven't beaten every team that way. It's not like they're steamrolling everybody, but for some reason, well, we know a couple of the reasons, but they just seem to absolutely destroy Michigan the past two seasons. So Michigan's going to have to figure it out. And that one's a tricky one because it's early. It's Michigan's first road game. It'll probably be, if whoever the starting quarterback is, it'll be their, unless it's Alan Bowman, it'll be their first, you know, true road hostile environment. So yeah, that'll be a real gut check for Michigan. All right. Last topic. I know it's been discussed in some other pods, but we're going to talk about it in the context of kind of where this wide receiver room is at. Dalen Baldwin committed from Jackson State, also played at Morgan State, FCS commitment, but someone that, you know, our 24/7 Sports national analysts are very high on. I think there's a lot of upside. You can go watch the film. You know, it's kind of limited in how much film there is, but just seems like someone who will contribute to a Power Five program. You know, Ohio State offered, Penn State sounded like they were getting kind of close to an offer, But Baldwin is from Southfield, Farmington area, committed to Michigan, you know, very earlier than he was initially planning to commit. So seems like a rare break for Michigan in the transfer portal where the guys, you know, I always think that where a guy's from plays a big role in where they end up transferring to if they're transferring up. You know, it sounds like it was the easiest transfer recruitment Michigan's had other than Mike Dana, but I did five thoughts on it. I am not projecting him to start. I am projecting him to play a lot. He's a legit 6'3". You see some listings of 6'4", 210 pounds. So he's got pretty good size and he joins a receiver room where they're, you know, they have Cornelius Johnson, they have Andrell Anthony, they have Christian Dixon, but they're not, you know, a lot of their top receivers are kind of the 6'6", 6'1", maybe even shorter variety. So Steve, your initial thoughts on the recruitment and kind of what this does for the receiver room, how this changes the dynamic.
This is one of those people ask about the portal, we talk about Michigan will exhaust any option they think makes the roster better from top to bottom, you know, because receiver probably wouldn't have been one of the first couple positions we would.
It wasn't the one we discussed. Yeah. Right?
Wouldn't have been one of the positions we would have pegged that they're going to get a guy or that they're going to heavily pursue a guy. I mean, he legit had an Ohio State offer. Now we know Ohio State not going to be hurting at receiver in 2021 or 2022 right. or 2028 with the roster they have right now. But the fact that they legit offered him a scholarship
after a workout too.
Yes.
Not a courtesy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Should tell you that this guy's capable of making some impact plays in the Big Ten. You know, that again, I mean, Ohio State's got like 8 top 100 receivers on their roster or something. It's outrageous the talent they have at that position. Like, you could argue that they've recruited that position better than any school has recruited any position over the last like 3 or 4 recruiting cycles, and they still offered Baldwin a scholarship. So, and again, he wouldn't have started there, but either way, you know, that's where depth chart can play a little bit of an advantage. Michigan could use a guy right. like this. You talk about the size discrepancy, you know, now you have him and Cornelius Johnson as guys that can kind of are more of that, what I would kind of consider your classic Michigan receiver, at least in as far as body type goes. So yeah, I think he's got the chance to make a pretty significant impact for them. A lot of people are talking about him as a guy who should get drafted after this season. Again, I think he's going to have to show it, but yeah. That's why of course he's going to have to show. I mean, he can't not show it and expect to get drafted.
No, but I know what you mean. Like, right. there's optimism because of what he did at Jackson State, but I think it was FCS.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
He isn't being asked to block at the same level. He isn't asked to be competing in like high traffic passes at the same caliber. I think some parts of the Southwest Athletic Conference are, you know, really good, but I think the physicality of the Big Ten will be probably the biggest question. Like, every draft pick has to show it, but I think right. there will be some eyes on how he handles certain things in the right. Big Ten.
He physically looks like a, you know, like a legit college receiver, though. Very impressive physically. Yeah, this almost like you know, the Jay Toya thing didn't work out for Michigan, and that was at a bigger position of need. But this one kind of feels like a Michigan caught a break here to have a former yeah. local kid become such a stud at his level and enter the portal, you know. And again, whether he would have played at Ohio State or not, I mean, this is still a kid who chose Michigan over Ohio State. I mean, it's still a recruiting win to an extent. Again, because I feel like we have as many people from Columbus that listen to these for some odd reason. you know, it's okay. You know, so but obviously had a bigger opportunity at Michigan to make an impact. So I think it's a choice that made sense for both sides.
Yeah.
And one that allows you to maybe breathe a little bit about the receiver room. Because
they did lose 2 pretty talented players.
Right. And it's a spot where maybe we haven't talked enough about is like a little bit like linebacker where they it feels really good up top. Like they're going to get some quality play from the guys that should play, but they're an injury or two away from, you know, being in an interesting position, particularly if, say, if Cornelius Johnson gets hurt.
Yeah.
You're throwing Andrell Anthony, who, again, we've heard had a good spring, but is a true freshman. You're throwing a guy like Andrell Anthony into the fire right away as your only receiver who's only over like 6 foot, 6 foot one. So
yeah. Yep.
Right. So that it gives them a little bit of breathing room at that outside spot too, you know, to have a little bit more depth there. And I think much like Dana, I think there's a ceiling to this one. I mean, I think this is a guy that if he acclimates himself, I mean, could really make a big impact for them. So
I agree. I'm very, like, I'm so curious to hear kind of the first impressions, maybe 2 weeks into fall camp. Cause I do think receiver is a spot where if I hear coaches say, oh yeah, he's really looking good. And it's not a, it's not when they're asked about somebody, you know, cause that's, you know, the Nico Collins hype was building before his sophomore season. You know, every once in a while, you know, Amar Darboh, I think, was another guy who kind of got the pre fall camp buzz. And then really had a strong, Ronnie Bell was another one. And actually Cornelius Johnson, you know, a lot of stuff got overlooked because of how poorly Michigan's season went last year. If you go back and watch the games, I mean, there's certainly room to improve and some learning moments. He had a couple really quiet games, but Cornelius Johnson had more 100-yard games last season than Nico Collins did in his entire career at Michigan. You know, he had a couple games where he was truly in a takeover mode and was just looking really, really, really good. I'm actually a little bit more I know exactly what you're saying, Steve, where if they lose one tall guy, they're in a pickle. But I'm actually pretty sold on the receiver room. They had a bit of a small case of the drops last season, so that's something that needs to be fixed. But I feel like they've got a really good blend, even before Baldwin, of size and speed. And what I think Baldwin adds, in addition to the, you know, NFL potential that you and others have discussed, is I think he gives Michigan a lot of flexibility. You know, if they want to line Ronnie Bell up in the slot, they can do that. They don't have to put him outside. If they want to put Roman Wilson in the slot, they can do that. They don't, I mean, you know, you lose the need to, like, you know, when someone's 6'6", they have to play outside. Now you can get a little bit more creative. And I think that's where, I mean, we still haven't really seen what I think Josh Gattis wants his offense to look like, but the way he talks about receivers, I think he really likes being able to be creative and flexible and put guys in different spots. I think that's probably where he feels most comfortable in putting plays and schemes together, is like being able to put guys where he wants to, not where he has to. And so that's where I think Baldwin is a really beneficial pickup for Michigan, in addition to the potential. I mean, the SWAC, Steve, I was telling you this before we hit record, they've produced some pretty good receivers. You know, John Stallworth, Jerry Rice, some might have heard of him, Donald Driver, Charlie Joyner. You know, it's those are all decades ago, but it's not. And, you know, there are players who have transferred out of the Southwest Athletic Conference who've made impacts at the Power Five level. So certainly very, very curious. Steve, as someone who covered the state of Michigan recruiting, had you ever heard of this guy before?
I believe vaguely, I guess, is the best way to put it. It's a name I feel like I remember, but I know Michigan didn't really show.
Sure. Well, much I mean, I don't
the
think
first time around nobody did.
Yeah, I was going to say, right? Morgan State was his only Division I offer, and I think Grand Valley might have offered.
Right.
I'm just curious how he got. You know, he described himself as a late bloomer, but I think his coach actually disputed that. I'm just curious how he was this far under the radar.
I mean, it happens, man. I mean, there's always. Every cycle, there's always guys. You see it every year. You see it in the NFL draft. You see a guy drafted from, you know, Podunk U. You're like, what the hell with this guy? You know, so it happens. But yeah, I mean, that's a pretty, and that's the thing is like Michigan at least can take comfort. At least they weren't the only one that slept on him.
That's true.
Literally everybody did. You're talking even like Western, Central,
Eastern. I was going to say, doesn't Eastern take a look here? That's not a critique of Eastern. I just am curious.
I don't disagree. So. I don't know. A name that sounds vaguely familiar, probably actually covered him at an event or two back in the day. But yeah, no, you got to, man, what a feeling. You know, talk about, and that's another reason. I think the motivation for a guy like that will be sky high now, knowing he can look himself in the mirror and say, my hard work has paid off. Let's keep it going. You know, because like, you know, talk about his high school profile, and he's made it. Now he'd be playing receiver at the University of Michigan. Like, he's got to be thinking, all right, I'm doing a lot of stuff right here. let's keep doing it right, and kind of keep it going.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure this week has been awesome for him. I mean, that you're right, because like that's the dream when you go. I haven't like talked to a ton of athletes who've done this, but I've talked to a few. When you kind of go out on a limb and you go to a school that you know, maybe your friends haven't even heard of, you know, your teammates in high school are kind of like, man, just hang it up. Right. Like, you know, you're really going to go play for a school that no one's heard of and try to make it up. And every player kind of has that chip on their shoulder, and they're always trying to ascend, climb, you know, get back, I guess, and to make it to Michigan. I mean, that's gotta be such a cool feeling for him, just from a, you know, his own personal life and experience standpoint. So yeah, I think he'll be a fascinating addition to the receiver room on the field, but I think he'll also help off the, I mean, he's been through a lot of spring camps, fall camps. He's been through a lot of college football, and the receiver room, for as you know, as much talent as we've talked about there being, not a lot of guys who have been through spring camps and fall camps and kind of know what it takes to be good at the college level. I mean, you know, Baldwin, a lot of his quotes at Jackson State were about the kind of the accountability he was trying to assert in the receiver room, you know, with don't take any reps off, things like that. So yeah, going to be a fascinating addition. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next time.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.